think we'll get to our verses in a minute. I'm going to talk about a couple of other things that I thought would be useful. I just read this kind of a quote. I think it was on LinkedIn, actually, that I really liked. And what I'm thinking is, now that we're like over a month into the course and we're kind of all really living here, your mind is no longer enamored by the bliss of being in a new place and being on vacation and not having to work and all of these types of things, because now we are here, we're living here. And so there's some really things that I want to put in meditation, I want to put a little bit into focus, because I feel just as it's very helpful as a jnani, as somebody who has knowledge, because now even the knowledge just in relationship to being able to differentiate your own presence from your mind. You know, you may not, it takes a while for everything to be Ishwar and all, there's all kinds of, you know, subtle things that we grow into. But as you start to kind of recognize your own presence in meditation, and I want to be putting more attention on that now, so that your own being is something very much present in all of your experience. You know, every experience that you have, it's not like you are changing because of that experience. Everything else is changing, though. You know, your mind is changing, your emotions are changing, your reactions to the world are changing, all of the things that you experience, all of those things. Those are Maya, they're in constant flux. But your being is not changing. And the fullness of your being, the wholeness of your being, is stable. But that requires viveka, which of course, after beginningless lifetimes, that viveka comes and goes. I think I've told the kind of the true joke of that time when I would leave Swamiji's teaching and say, will I be able to make it all the way up to my room before it closes over, you know? And so eventually you make it all the way up to your room and your knowledge is still intact, you know, yourself is still present. But I think that we can do things to help that, besides focusing on it in meditation and doing inner child work and doing the way of being with others in the world and that type. That's all very helpful. But what allows these inner child work and also the way we are with others to happen in a relaxed mind, right? A non-reactive mind, is something that, first of all, having the presence of yourself kind of aproksha or obvious to you. So you don't, okay, where am I here? Where am I? You know, to where you know yourself well enough that you're always here. You're always you always recognize yourself. And the nature of yourself is something which by yourself is whole and complete. And it's really what we meditate on, you know, for shanti, for ananda, for love, for wholeness. My being is the source of that. And so the mind needs some time, which we really call nididhyasana, shravana, manana, nididhyasana. It needs some time to learn to be with myself, because it already knows from beginningless time how to be with objects and how to be engaged in the world. It knows that you're the most experienced. You couldn't be more experienced at that. But that self-recognition as being the constant, ever-present, no matter what you're thinking, no matter what you're feeling, no matter where your mind is going or what the perceptions are, it's all taking place in that self, which is not even like that irritation right there, the buzzsaw. That can be irritating to your ears and to your mind, but it is not irritating to yourself. Yourself does not hear the buzzsaw. Right? So yourself is always sacrosanct. It never changes. It never loses any ananda. It's never ruffled in any way, because it's non-dual and it's not an object in time and space. So you're always the same. And your nature for the mind is like a sanctuary. It's a sanctuary where there's peace and strength. It's another thing to notice as you differentiate yourself. Yourself is so, so very, very strong, not in a muscular way, but just in your being. It's very strong. There's nothing that can harm it or shake it or rattle it. Absolutely not subject to mithya. Just like the snake can do nothing to the rope. Nothing. It's a different order of reality. So there's nothing that happens in this world that can do anything to me at all, not in the slightest. It can bother my mind, you know. And it was a child. A lot of stuff can be stored in the unconscious just to spare us until we're old enough to handle it. All of these things. But that's all the nature of the mind and your sense organs and your body and the unconscious. All kinds of stuff is going on there and affecting it also, creating reactions and everything. But not for yourself. And so this viveka, so I am always present, is just it's one of the gifts of having knowledge, of having self-knowledge. It's one of the major polas, the major gifts of knowing yourself is that there's someone who is fine and could not be better and could not be more whole or more complete than your own being, and not subject to any, nobody can take it away. Even you can't, as naughty as you may be, nothing will happen to you, to yourself, nothing. And as good as you may be, yourself is free of punya and papa completely. It's not going to become better, it's not going to become worse, it's free of time, you simply are. And that being it couldn't be more beautiful, it couldn't be more stable. And so we need to develop that through nitya dhyasana, through our contemplations, and just through living. We need to just continually bring my mind back, even when you're walking around. It's a good exercise when you're walking around. When you're talking to somebody, this is a good sadhana. When you're talking to somebody, or somebody has done something to hurt your feelings, or they're irritating you and you feel like, you know, saying some harsh words or exploding in one way or another, you know, probably among us, it'd probably be a relatively gentle explosion, but nevertheless, there's irritation rising. A good sadhana, whenever that happens, you know, is to not act it out and turn toward it. Bring your mind, just like we did in the meditation today, bring your mind just toward yourself, just as a sadhana. There'll come a time when that's not a difficult thing to do. You know, that's kind of what you do. 99% of the time, it's what you do, because you don't want to go there. You don't want to have a mind that's all reacting and all emotional and all upset and all of these things. You don't want that, and you don't need to have that. But habitually, we have a mind, all of us have a mind that reacts to certain things. We have all our own set. We each have our own little set of triggers. And I don't think one of us could say, well, I'm glad I don't have any triggers. I know a lot of people do have triggers, but of course, I was really blessed at birth, and my mind is as always has shanti. And I just stays quiet. There's nothing to say, you just go. Okay, that's good. That's wonderful. But our gift as part of this knowledge is really learning how to be with those reactions or those discomforts in a way that starts to keep the mind calm. Because every time you pull back from a reaction, you're creating another way of being in the brain, in your mind. It creates another pathway. And so, and the pathway, that pathway, which in which the reaction is being put on hold even, just put on hold. So just, you have a reaction, bam, it's out. Now instead, to have that ability to put it on hold and just keep quiet. Maybe you'll say something later, but you're giving your mind chance, you know, to not do that. And then to just bring your mind back to yourself. to this me that we're keeping working on in meditation. We continue to work on it. You can work on it on yourself in your own contemplations, in your own walks throughout the day. They're little what we call micro meditations, little micro nididhyasanas. As you're walking along, just notice that you are there, that you are there, and you are not changing. So the same thing that you notice in meditation, you know, you notice as you're walking around. It's not like in meditation yourself is there, and when you're walking around and engaged in the world, that it's not. There really is no difference between a meditative state, yourself in a meditative state, or in a worldly engaged state. There's no difference at all. The self is illumining equally, and is the self fully present to an extrovert or an introvert state. But the good thing about the nididhyasana is because my mind doesn't really know that. It has to learn that, you know, and experience that, recognize it over and over again till it gets used to that fact that I'm ever present. I'm the Adhishtana. I'm the one who is changelessly present in every thought I have and everything that I'm doing. And so one way to help you with that, and of course help myself, because I went through doing all of that too, and I will do it still if something happens in my mind. Don't act it out. So I'm not telling you something I don't personally know and support for my own self. Something hurts you, don't act it out. Hang on to it. Be with yourself. Simple, you know. Just give, it gives you a little space. It stops that reaction from being the only, kind of the only go-to. Like, when this happens, I react. Now, when this happens, I don't react. I hold back on it. You know? And then I can process that reaction myself internally. What's really bothering, like my little statement would be something like, well, what's really hurting me? What's really bothering me? You know? It gives you a little bit of Dhamma. Dhamma means a certain control of your mind. Not that the mind just gets to do whatever it wants. It gets you into a lot of pain and trouble sometimes when it doesn't have to, if you have some of these tools. You know? So that simple little exercise, you know, and then learning how to just bring continually throughout the day, not just in meditation, just recognize that you're there until you never don't recognize that. Because you are always there. But that viveka, like when we were trying to do in the meditation today, is to notice your presence amid, when all of the sounds are there. Your presence is there. Nothing is happening to it. You're not, your being isn't doing anything. You simply are. But you need to notice that. That's a wonderful, beautiful thing. Then to notice that in reference to your body, to your breath, you're there, you know. And there comes a time when that's just naturally simultaneous, you know, because you've had enough time, after some time, you have enough time of doing that differentiation of just being yourself, recognizing at any given moment you are there doing absolutely nothing. This very familiar me, I simply am. And these activities are going on. I mean, that's the viveka, you know. And then as that becomes natural, we also, as we're learning and seeing, we also recognize that this self that I am is the whole self of Ishvara. That brings in a whole other type of understandings also, you know. But this one simple one for now, because I'm going to be spending a little time on that, I'm just suggesting that you do this, what do you call them, micro meditation throughout the day when you're taking a walk. See if you recognize yourself there, stable, your own being, doing nothing at all except being you as you're taking a walk. When you're talking to somebody, split second, recognize your own presence. If a reaction comes up, make a sankalpa at the beginning of the day not to, of course I can remind you of this in meditation now, when you get up and walk outside, make a sankalpa the beginning of the day to see if you can contain your reactions and just not give it out. When we're practicing Maunam, I remember at the ashram when I was a student there, so we practiced Maunam maybe once a week, or for some months, then there was a lot of time when we didn't practice Maunam at all, but we definitely, throughout my course in the 70s, we did. At various times, sometimes longer than others, you know, but throughout the course we did, not consistently, but throughout. The thing that I learned is exactly this in terms of your speech, because if you're Maunam, the speech that is going to come out just without even thinking about it is stopped because of your sankalpa Maunam. So here it is, the thought arises or the reaction arises and it goes, no exit. It doesn't get the exit, you know. And then because of that, this is a great, great thing about Maunam, you know. So the great thing about that is that then your mind readjusts, you know. It gives some space to you, it readjusts, and you start to fall in love with not the Maunam, but what the Maunam provides for you, the mind it provides for you, because nothing is allowed to come out, and therefore there's these breaks that are put on, you know. And those breaks allow you to recognize, and I used to feel grateful, you know, especially if there was some reaction or something, or some useless thing I wanted to say or whatever it was there. It didn't materialize because of the Maunam, you know. And so my mind did not have to suffer the personal effects of that reaction. You realize that if you have a reaction, just a negative reaction, positive reactions are nice. They don't cause any problem. But the negative reactions cause a hurt in the other person and a hurt in you. It's not just in the other person. And then there's a mess that has to be cleaned up. You know, that's the drawback of letting reactions come through and spilling on to whoever they're directed at. That both of you are hurt, and then there's some cleanup that has to be done. You know, so if you find yourself able to withhold that, then there's some relief and shanti, which is very beautiful. And then, of course, if there's something between you and the other person or whoever that needs to be worked out, wait until the shanti is there and it's not in the middle of a reaction, and then say, something's been bothering me. Do you mind if we talk about it? Or, you know. Then there's two sane people who are not, it's like a burning flame, that fire is not taking place. Everything's fine, you can have a conversation. But what you have learned is how not to engage in that way. You have a choice. Like if you decide to get angry and that's a conscious choice because you think that yourself and the other would benefit from that in some way, it's a conscious choice, but that acting out without choice is not in our best interests. If it's a choice, then that's your choice, but it's usually not a choice. It's just that we don't know how to contain the issue, whatever it is. So this is just building up strength. I'll tell you, the real strength that is that you gain such a value for having that choice, because the shanti and the confidence in your own self and your own mind becomes stronger and stronger. You know, you don't feel the victim of your mind or your reactions. A reaction comes and that's your thought, and then you have to be with it and deal with it, see what's really going on there. But it's an internal work that you do. So I'm just I'm certainly not perfect. None of us are perfect, so it's not about us looking at each other, okay, you're not perfect because you're having a reaction. It's just a tools that the mind really values from as you learn these tools and you work with them. This is a good one to work on. And it's not about not dealing with the reaction internally. It's about being able to say no to bringing it into the world.
There. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to disturb our meditation. I have another thing that I don't want to disturb in the meditation, but I might next in the morning, if I don't talk about it tonight. It has to do with, maybe I'll talk about it right now. Then we'll go to our rest. We've got time. I may have talked about this, so if I talk about it now, then I want to bring it in as something we do in meditation. This is a different subject. One way this meditation, this particular meditation or exercise, is very helpful in making, in getting you used to recognizing your own presence. And it has to do with, first of all, this understanding, number one, is that whether you have a thought modification born of sense perception, like right now with my eyes open and I'm seeing all of you, and I'm aware of my physical body through my sense of touch, so now this perception that I'm having is born of my sense organs, right? And so when the perception, it's called a vritti, so this is a vritti, it's a thought modification, born of my sense perception. And such a vritti that's born of sense perception has a certain reality to it, because we know that this body and my sense organs and this world is vyavahara, means it has a shared reality. This isn't my imagination. And as an ajnani since beginningless time, this identification with the body is very, very strong. So I'm just going along having, you know, my having vrittis that are brought about by sense perception, the natural identification with the physical body makes it difficult for me to recognize that my being, this me, is the adhishtana and pervasive to the vritti. Because even now, as you're looking through your sense organs and hearing through your ears, what you're really experiencing is the vritti. Right? If you remember in the Panchakarana, the Sukshma Sharira, I mean, not the Panchakarana, but how the Sukshma Sharira is composed, you know, it's the sattva elements. Each individually is what's responsible for the subtle sense organs. But it's the sattva elements collectively, you know, the sattva aspect of the elements collectively that make the mind. And so your whole mind is able to take in the totality of your experiences, the sounds from your ears, the forms from your eyes, the touch from your body. All of them are being collectively experienced in the mind, even though the sense organs are bringing them in one by one, so to speak, or through each of their own particular talents. Like your sense of eyes only are good for form, your ears are only good for sound, like that. So this mind then is giving me the whole experience, including the experience of my body through the sense of touch and through all whatever the sense organs land on. I'm getting the whole experience here in the form of a vritti, in the form of a thought modification, which is illumined by consciousness. Right? That's how it works. Now say, so that's what, but when that's how that works, this body belongs to Ishvara. This world that we're experiencing is what we call vyavahara. It's a shared reality. It's not imaginal. It's not created by me. And I can't project this and withdraw it. You know, and so this body and this world has a very strong sense of reality and identification for me. Right? But my experience is only a vritti. Okay? When I have an imagination, like say if I ask you like to imagine sitting in a lot at our beach here, sitting down and enjoying the waves and the sky and all that. And so we paint a picture of this beautiful imagination. And as I'm painting the picture, then you start to have that imagination. Now that imagination also is only a vritti. That's all. So we have vritti. Right? Vritti is what? It's sattva. It's just the manas, the buddhi manas expression of sattva, which reflects consciousness and takes in whatever, for its content, whatever is is the source of the content, like if the content of the vritti is being given to me through my sense organs, then that's the content of the vritti. If the content of the vritti is given to me because of my imaginal capacities, that's the content of the vritti. Everybody with me? So we have the imaginal content or the sensory-born content. Now, the vrittis, both vrittis being sattva, they by nature, because of the sattva, reflect consciousness. So either vritti, whether it's imaginal vritti or a vritti born of sense perception, both vrittis are known because of the knownness, the self-evident nature of consciousness. Everybody with me on that? Okay. But since they're both equally vrittis, since they're both equally known because illumined by consciousness, why is the experience of this vritti so different than the experience of the imaginal vritti? What is the difference? Now, in the imaginal vritti, the fact that this is all coming from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you, that is very well known. The mityatva of the vritti is very well known. But also, your own presence, your own being, is there pervading the entire vritti, not just focused on one character in the vritti. The what we call the self is even being more subtle than space, pervades the entire vritti. And that is kind of recognizable easily, experientially, almost what we call aparoksha. The fact that my being is the self of the whole vritti and everything in it. Because, I guess, because we don't have the tremendous ongoing identification with this body, and that this body, mind, sense organs, and this world is Ishwar Srishti, is Bhagawan's creation, not my creation, that identification is very, very strong. It's so strong that it's hard to recognize that I pervade this vritti, born of sense perception, in the exactly the same way that I pervade the imaginal vritti. Myself, my being, seems to be much more present in the imaginal vritti than in the sensory-born content. Much more present. And yet, there is no difference between the vrittis. It's not like some vyavahara or empirical reality has entered in to the vritti. Right? The vritti is just an image. The content is just an image that hopefully, if the pramanas, that the means of knowledge, are working properly, that image in the vritti will be true to the object. But what you're experiencing, it's not like you've swallowed this whole thing into the mind and you're actually experiencing something stula, something physical. You absolutely are not. And similarly, in this imaginal vritti, you know, the whole vritti, you know, is sattva. So like for the Ishwara Swarupa, for the Ishwara's Maya, the entire vritti for you is sattva, and that entire vritti has me for its adhishtana, and so everything in the vritti is known. And here, everything in the vritti is known. I need to be, if this viveka, when it's an imagination, I can recognize myself as being the self of everything in the vritti. This one is much harder because of what we call the dehatma buddhi, this conviction that this body is myself. And so that conviction, that knowledge, mityajnanam, you know, that erroneous knowledge, that erroneous conviction, is still carried in that vritti. The buddhi, the knowledge that goes along with that vritti, the identification knowledge, is included in that vritti. Okay? And so it can be really fun and helpful to go back and forth between an imaginal vritti and a perceptual vritti, because there is no difference at all in terms of yourself as the adhishtana of the entire vritti. So it's just another way for us to gain that viveka. Because if I can gain the viveka, that discrimination, recognize myself in an imaginal vritti, that is so useful if I understand that the perceptual vritti is not different at all. The vritti. It's not that the perceptual vritti is more real than the imaginal vritti in terms of the experience. See what I mean? Both are data that are there existing in the antakarana, illumined by consciousness. So this is just an exercise for us to do. I'll probably be working on that along with this more focusing on myself in the meditation. But I would practice it on your own, because here, like, you can just close your eyes when you're walking about. Close your eyes, imagine something, recognize your being, you know, in relationship to that imagination, that there's no part of the imagination that is away from your being. Then open your eyes, see this Ishwar Srishti, and recognize the same self. Close your eyes, imagination, same self. Open your eyes, imagination. Practice that differentiation, so that you can get used to being yourself, recognizing yourself. I would say recognize yourself, be yourself. Because the buddhi, when that act of recognition is turning toward you. So you have to move the ahankara, the I notion is, oh look, I'm aware of myself, as though you're the knower, you're the awareness, aware of this thing that you call the self. That's not what it is. Your buddhi is turning toward, like a mirror, you know, it's turning toward its own being. And so that buddhi is full of you then. Right? It's full of you, right, as its content. But you are its content. You, the conscious being, are its content. So the buddhi is as though erasing itself. So we have to move the ahankara, that I notion, from the buddhi to me. So if I say, okay, turn your mind towards your buddhi, now just be yourself. That's more technically putting more words to it. Turn your mind just towards your buddhi, so that the mind is filled with you. Then just be yourself, back and forth, until you recognize that yourself is ever-present, no matter what the vritti is. It's absolutely irrelevant. The vritti has no other content, no other substance but you. You are its being. You are its consciousness, and that never changes. You never change. But you have to do all kinds of things for the mind to assimilate that fact. It's not the teacher can't just say, oh, you never change, the world changes, go in peace. It doesn't work. Right? We have to really sit with that and recognize the fact of it. Okay. So we'll work on this in the meditation. Om Tat Sat. Let's do a verse. We are on verse 28. We have to change the clock back. Oh, yeah. I'm getting confused when I look at it. Okay. Verse 28.
Tairandastatra bhuvanam bhogya bhogashrayod bhavaha hiranyagarbhastulesmin dehe vaishvanaro bhave dehe vaishvanaro bhave taijasa vishvatam yata devatir yam naradayaha.
Okay. In the previous couple of verses, we went through the whole again from the Tathagata Buddha. We went through the whole Panchikarana, which means the Panchikarana is that taking of the subtle, the five subtle elements, taking the tamas aspect of those five subtle elements and making them go through this fivefold process. So Panchikarana actually means making them five. And so then each one of the five subtle elements is transformed into a physical element by dividing itself in half and then taking an eighth of each of the other four. And so because half of it is really comprised of the other four elements, that grossifies the element. Okay, because still primarily space, still have 50% air. So the space, air, fire, water, earth is still what we experience, but it's grossified by this combination. So as this, what we call the stula sharira, it's really the stula sharira is this body, the stula prapancha is the world. The stula prapancha, prapancha means creation, the world. So this world, which is prapancha, it means it's made of the five elements which have gone through the panchikarana. So the stula means gross or physical, prapancha means creation or world. So the stula prapancha, having gone through this process of panchikarana, becomes what we call virat. There's another word for, instead of virat, that they're using here, Vaishvanara. So you can say Vaishvanara or virat. Both of them are the name for Hiranyagarbha, the sukshma prapancha, Hiranyagarbha, that then informs the stula prapancha. And so Hiranyagarbha, experiencing the stula prapancha, is what we call Vaishvanara or virat. So we have names, right? Hiranyagarbha is a name. Ishwara is a name. So Brahman with the maya, this maya capacity, we call Ishwara. Before it begins its projection, then Ishwara is just Brahman plus maya. Once it manifests or projects as the world, it gets another name. From the subtle standpoint, Ishwara is called Hiranyagarbha, or the total subtle body. From the standpoint of the universe that has gone through this stula, this panchikarana, it has another name. We call it Virat or Vaishvanara. Okay, it's still all only Ishwara. In the end, it's just Brahman plus maya, right? And when I can say, well, you know, I have a deep sleep state, I have a dream state, I have a waking state, but it's all just me. You know, it's not like Ishwara is replaced by Hiranyagarbha, or Hiranyagarbha is replaced by Virat. It's just looking at the Ishwara, the whole prapancha, the whole universe from the standpoint of the stula sharira, the stula prapancha, or the sukshma. Stula means gross, physical. Stula, prapancha means universe, so the whole physical world that we experience. We give a name to Ishwara. When we're looking at Ishwara in terms of this physical world, we call him Virat or Vaishvanara. When we're looking at Ishwara from the standpoint of the subtle body, then we call him Hiranyagarbha. But it's Ishwara who is Hiranyagarbha and who is Virat. And then in the deepest reality, I, the Atma, the self, Brahman, is the very self which has the maya, which is Nitya, which manifests like that. So all of it, really, in truth, is Brahman. Just like the truth of the clay pot is only the clay, it's mitya. The nama-rupa is mitya. This whole creation, including the ajnanam, or the maya, is all mitya. It means that it depends totally on me. I am itself, right? So if I say, I am Brahman, but I am Brahman, or my being is the one non-dual being, this maya comes into manifestation, is sustained and resolves. That's one level. But now, of course, being the humans that we are with the curiosity, the question, of course, comes, well, how does maya, you know, which is like an incidental attribute of Brahman, how does it do this? And so then we have to go through in detail this whole paradigm, this whole explanatory model that includes everything that can possibly be there in the universe in terms of consciousness, in terms of prana, in terms of activity, in terms of breath, all of these things, you know, in terms of our sense organs and our mind, everything has to be included. And we want to include all, we want to include all of it also, because we're all part of this creation. So we have to be included in this creation. And so our mind needs a model that can make sense, that can actually hold this vision, you know, a descriptive model that can hold together into one, in one piece, the entire totality of our experience, which includes yourself as Brahman, right? Yourself as Brahman, and then the whole creation, and then yourself as part of the creation. So that's why we have these names. So here, so we've already given names to the causal body. For the jiva, it's prajna. For Ishwara, it's Ishwara, right? Prajna, Ishwara. Then we have Tejasa for the jiva, and Hiranyagarbha, you know, for Ishwara. On the subtle, total subtle, and the Sameshti subtle, total subtle, and the Vyashti subtle, which is the jiva. Vyashti means tree in the forest, the individual. And now we have to see this, stula. So what he says here is taihi andaha tatra bhuvanam bhogya bhogashraya udbhavaha hiranyagarbha stule asmin dehe vaishvanaraha bhavet. And then taijasa vishvatam yata devatirayak nara adiha. So he says, taihi, by the five elements that have gone through pachikarana, that have become grossified, anda. Anda is called the Brahmananda. Brahmananda is the full expression of the creation. Full expression means we have now, you've got Ishwara who has become Hiranyagarbha, who has become Virat. So the whole expression of the creation includes the tamas aspect of the five subtle elements going through this process of becoming fivefold, okay, as part of this descriptive model. So he says, so by these five subtle elements that have gone through the process of panchikarana, so by the five gross elements, there this anda is born. So here, then here, atra bhuvanam, this anda is born. And here, and in within this anda, within this total manifestation, there is the bhuvanam. Here, bhuvanam, he puts it in singular, but there are seven bhuvanams. There are seven worlds up and seven worlds down. And so that's made clear. All of the worlds within this manifestation, all of the worlds are there. So what he says here is, by the tetra, there in this Brahmananda, means the totality of what is, in that Brahmananda, he says, Brahmananda antara. Inside of that, bhuvanani upara bhage. In the upper portion, right, in the upper portion of the Brahmananda, there are seven worlds going up. In the lower, including this one, there are seven worlds going up, and then there are seven worlds going down within this whole Brahmananda. So that means 14 worlds, okay? The Bhuloka, this loka, is right in the middle. So you have the hell worlds, call them the hell worlds going down, and then we have the heaven worlds or more subtle worlds going up. So that's what's meant by bhuvanam. So in all of these, each one of these worlds, bhogya bhogashriya udbhavaha. What is born in each of them? He says the bhogashriyas are born along with the objects to be enjoyed. So now we have to go back to Tetrabodha for a minute. The bhogashriya is the ayat, it's like saying the ayatana, bhogayatana. Ayatana means like the basis for your experience. The basis for your experience means the physical body. The sukshma sharira comes into the physical body. The subtle body takes on a physical body. The physical body it takes on is a counter. Swamiji always say it like this for bhogayatana. It's a counter of experience. It's a counter for the experience of these myragadveshas. The sense objects in this world that are there for my experience in terms of sukha and dukkha. They're there because of my prarabdha karma, actually. I take this body because of my prarabdha karma. And I have a certain set of sense objects to enjoy in this enjoy for punya, in terms of punya and papa, to enjoy experience positively or negatively, they're there in this world for me to experience. So what he says is, so all of these worlds are experienced within the Brahmananda, within the total creation, and within that are born the physical body and the physical sense objects. The sukshma sharira contains the rajas and the sattva. And so my sense organs, my sattva sense organs and mind, using this physical body, are able to perceive the physical sense objects. Right? And then I gain vrittis, which are subtle, in the mind. The sense organs are subtle. And so the mind, by the experience, they're coming into contact between the sense organs and the sense objects, the vritti is filled by that perception. And that's what we mean by enjoy. Enjoy really means just experience. But I enjoy it in terms of sukha and dukkha. So it's not in English, enjoy is just a positive word. Here, when they use the word enjoy, it's not just positive. Like we don't say, oh, I really am enjoying my suffering. We don't use the word enjoy like that. So you can use the word instead experience if you want to. I have to experience my pleasure and pain in this world, you can say. So then he says, Hiranyagarbha stule asmin dehe vaishvanaraha bhavet. In this world that has gone through panchikarana, Hiranyagarbha stule asmin dehe, from the standpoint of this stula deha, this physical body, becomes Vaishvanara. That's not like Virat, that's his name. So when I'm looking at Hiranyagarbha, from the standpoint of this physical body, then we call him Virat. If I'm looking at Hiranyagarbha just from his own standpoint, then it's Hiranyagarbha. But Hiranyagarbha pervades this stula prapancha, and then his name becomes Virat, or Vaishvanara. On the other hand, Taijasa Vishwatam Yata Devatiryan Niradiyaha. So here we say Taijasaha Vishwatam Yataha, because there are many Taijasas, right? Each jiva is a Taijasa, like Hiranyagarbha. Taijasa is the name for the sukshma sharira, for the subtle body. So this Taijasa, then, we continue here with the Bhavet. The Taijasa as the devas and the tiryak, the animals, and the humans, etc. These are all different types of upadis, all different types of body. So the taijasa, the subtle body, becoming like a deva or an animal or a human being or a fish or a worm, whatever upadis, shariras, bodies are available here that can take a sukshma sharira, these subtle bodies, according to their karma, will take that physical form. And when doing that, it Vishwatam Yataha, it then gains the stature of being Vishwa. It gains its Vishwatam. In other words, it is called now Vishwa. Because Hiranyagarbha, the Taijasas, plural, right, are now embodied. They're not in that state of unembodied state. They're now embodied. And so here. So when they're embodied here, in the physical world, one that has becomes the stula prapancha because of the panchikarana, then they gain the stature of being Vishwa. So the Vishwas, the Taijasas, become the Vishwas, the Jivas, the Prajnas, and the Prajnas are Atma plus the Self plus the Ajnanam, or the Avadanam, covering the covering of the Atma, becomes Prajna in the causal body, and that Prajna becomes Taijasa. The prajnas become the taijasas in the subtle body, in the subtle prapancha, and the taijasas become the vishwas in the stula prapancha, themselves having gone through panchikarana along with Hiranyagarbha. So the taijasa and Hiranyagarbha, all of those elements go through this process of becoming stula. Then the sukshma sharira can become stula. The tamas aspect goes through that process. And then the sukshma shariras take these bodies. Okay, So that's how it goes. Om Tat Sat, because our time is up. Next class, we get to see about the worms. Yeah. We become worms, like the worms, poor worms, until we gain knowledge.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
One thing I forgot to mention is that we've gone for our meetings, our half-hour meetings, that when you and I are meeting together individually.